I have a concern that we're living through the greatest era of fake entrepreneurship. I believe that self-awareness is incredibly important, and I do believe that the coolness of entrepreneurship has made people go towards that light that might actually be way better being a number three or a number six or a number nine.
Most of the people watching right now, everything you have budgeted for in your life, you can pay for. It's the things you didn't budget for, the big dream. But everything else, you got covered. Everything people pay attention to. House note, car note, electric bill, water bill, basics. Everything gets covered. What if you just added a whole bunch of other stuff to the list? What if we were all brought up to say, hey, we're going to cover all this stuff? People would be even more productive. If you're going to go from zero to a millionaire, when you get to a millionaire, if you want to go to the next level, you want to go to 10 million, you will have to give up the millionaire life. And that's why I said I got to hold myself accountable to the goal.
If you're spending your time on Netflix, if you're spending your time playing video games, if you're spending all of your time doing things that don't add any value financially to your life, well, if you compare that to somebody who's now working, who's now learning, who's investing in the education, you're going to see two completely different outputs.
When you've got this hustler's mentality, you're not looking for a handout. You just know you have to outwork everybody in the room. You got to put the work in after hours. You're not wasting your time being entertained. You're not wasting your time watching TV all day. You're not wasting your time complaining about what you don't have. The hustler has already come to the conclusion that if they don't have something, they have to become. It's not connections that wins. It's not even education that wins. I can be inundated with information. I can be educated, but with no application. The hustler moves in a different realm of wisdom, a different realm of application. They're going after it. Everything that they have is on the table.
Entrepreneur, right? It's one of the most overused nonsense terms out there. I can teach anybody to become an entrepreneur in 2 minutes flat. All you got to do is go to fiverr.com, open an account, and offer to make videos or images for someone. Boom, you're self-employed, you're an entrepreneur.
You can become anything you want to become, but you're going to have to pay a heavy price to get there. So the question is, what is it that you want to do? Most of you aren't going to know the answer to that. So you're going to go explore.
Don't try to do what everybody else is doing. So if you do what everybody else is doing, it's going to be a lot more challenging. You might have to sacrifice evenings. You might have to spend less time on Instagram, on Netflix. You might have less weekend time. If you can dedicate yourself, odds are you're going to be successful.
People that are successful, they can self-soothe. They can stay emotionally calm in the midst of a storm. When everybody else is panicking, they're only looking at solutions. The whole point is to switch you out of problem mode into solution mode.
Negative emotions are trying to teach you something. They're trying to teach you the opposite. Something else is going on.
The thing with excuses is sometimes they're very true. But it doesn't serve you. It doesn't serve your goal. So are you going to let it sit with you, or are you going to find a way around it?
Are you working in a job where you can earn the money you need to live the life you want while being fulfilled and happy doing the work you do? I think that is the definition. You don't have to be an entrepreneur for that. Many of the people creating the biggest changes in the world are not entrepreneurs. Think about the engineers at NASA. Think about the people who are inventing new technologies. Think about the people who come up with new medicines that are changing lives. Many of these people are working for companies that they are paid well, they love their jobs, they're making a contribution to humanity. And it is enough if you're that. This idea that you got to be working for yourself is so outdated. Rather, you got to look at three things. Number one, can I exercise what I'm really good at doing? Number two, do I love what I'm doing? Number three, am I making money doing this?
And what we're good at together is not being right all the time. It's basically learning from your mistakes. So the physics of progress is you come up with a hypothesis that should be as informed as possible. You figure out a way to turn that into something you can actually do. So you're going to run a test. Then you actually run that test. And then this is where most people fall down. You have to lower your psychological defenses to stare nakedly at the results. And oftentimes that's gonna be, you didn't do something well, you didn't think through this right, you made a mistake somewhere. And then if you're willing to do that and you learn from that, then you can re-inform your hypothesis, make it a little bit better, run that whole system again. And once you get in that loop, then you can really make progress. But yeah, that the tenacity it takes to face your inadequacies and continue to try, that's where we've succeeded.
So when Instagram was just getting off the ground, right, in like 2010, you could go and start an Instagram channel on makeup, and maybe you might end up like Huda Beauty, which has like 49 million fans today. But they were one of the early ones. You got to get in early. I think TikTok is still early. So I think there's an opportunity in TikTok. Instagram, I think, is later stage. But there are also other fields which are picking up right now. It's not just about social media. For example, coaching. Coaching is blowing up right now. More and more companies are looking for coaches for their employees.
What would be worse than frustration would be despair, giving up. No hope, but frustration is a sign that you haven't given up. You know you can do something, but you haven't figured it out.
A lot of people's reasoning, which was ours originally when we wanted to make movies, is we don't have enough money. So we're just going to go and do this thing until we have enough money. We don't have enough time. And the truth is, if you play the no BS, what would it actually take? And you say, I don't have enough money. Then you keep going down and go, well, how much money do I need? Okay, what would it take for me to get that money? And sometimes people don't want to look at the answers. So maybe it takes you having to sell your house, move in with your in-laws, and rent one of their bedrooms for the next 3 years in order to save your money so that you can go and start a company. Well, some people don't want to do that. Okay, well, at least now you have your answer and you're not sitting there using the excuse that you don't have enough money. You just looked at it and like, oh, for me to get there, I need to live with my in-laws for 3 years. I don't want to do that. And now you've just decided. And now you're not beating yourself up over, oh my God, I can't believe I'm not there yet. Or like with us with Quest, we didn't leave ourselves any room for excuses because we just went down that list of, are we giving this over? Are we doing this? Are we actually showing up? And if the answer is no, then how can you expect to reach your goal?
I am completely egalitarian. I believe everybody has that. When I wrote the book Mastery, which is what this book is about, to prove my point that everyone has it, I interviewed contemporary masters. And one of them is the woman Temple Grandin, who was born with high-level autism, right? She was going to be hospitalized for her entire life. When she was 2 or 3 years old, she had the good luck of finding the right teacher who brought her out of her shell. And she eventually became a very respected professor of animal research, right? She's absolutely brilliant. And she also studies autism itself. If somebody with that kind of disability, that kind of thing, you know, everything stacked against her, if she can reach, she can figure it out and reach mastery, then I certainly believe everybody has that potential. But I know it doesn't come easy. It's a process and you have to be patient, but you have to put in the work.
Wealth is mindset before it hits your bank account. And when it comes to the differences between the rich and the poor, it doesn't start with how much money you make. It doesn't start with what degree you have. It doesn't start with who your parents are. It doesn't start with what background you have. It starts with what mindset you have. And this is really the root of wealth. We're all given 24 hours in a day. So the difference between somebody who becomes successful versus somebody who does not is now what input you put in those 24 hours. If you're spending your time on Netflix, if you're spending your time playing video games, if you're spending all of your time doing things that don't add any value financially to your life, well, if you compare that to somebody who's now working, who's now learning, who's investing in the education, you're going to see two completely different outputs. Wealthy people spend their money to earn more money. The majority of everyone else spend their money to buy things, which makes everybody else around them rich. You have to understand that this is just what the system is. Lenders are in the business of lending money, period. They make money when they lend money. So it is in their best interest to lend you more money. A salesperson is in the business of selling something. It's in their best interest to sell you something bigger, sell you something more because they're on commission. The more they sell, the more money they make. period. And so now when you understand this way of thinking, you're going to start changing the way you start looking at things. What is a corporation's best interest? A corporation's best interest isn't for you to keep your money in your pocket and invest your money and be financially smart. A corporation's best interest is to now get you to open up your wallet and buy their stuff, because that's how they make money. Does that make them evil? Well, I'll let you decide. I think, look, you don't need to assign an emotion. It just is what it is. Because once you understand this, you're just going to look at the world very differently. Because when you understand the way the system works, now you can say, huh, in the business of selling me something, a bank's in the business of lending me something, a salesperson's in the business of getting me to buy something bigger, what do you need? I need the financial education to know what I can buy. Because guess what? We all need things. And when you have money, you don't feel so bad about spending money because you know how to control it. Now I can go to a corporation and buy the things that I want, that I like, and have a great experience, because I can. I can go out and know when I should borrow money. Maybe I use money, borrow money to buy other assets. You borrow money to buy rental properties. I borrow money to grow a business. Maybe I go to a salesperson and I have them sell my things for me. Now you start thinking about things very differently because you understand the way the system works. Best return that I got on my investment isn't the real estate investments that I made, even though those have made me great returns. It's not the stock market investments that I made, even though they made me great returns. It's not the startup investments that I made. It's the investments that I made in myself. Because for me, the investments that I put into my own financial education have paid off many, 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 many times over. And you can't see those returns anywhere else. You know, they say that the best investment you can make is in you. And for me, that was first by reading books. When I started my financial education journey, YouTube didn't have this level of financial education out there, or just general business education or whatever. So I started by reading books. Now you don't even have to pay the price to get a book. Just go watch as many YouTube videos as possible about financial education, starting a business, about increasing your income, about investing, anything related to financial education. Go start watching YouTube videos. You don't have to watch my channel if you don't like it. Watch whoever you want. I'd rather see you successful than anything else. So go watch as many videos as you can. You have a ton of videos as well. Once you start watching videos and you absorb yourself into this, now you might want something a little bit deeper, something a little bit more comprehensive. And this is where then start reading books. I would recommend that you go out and start by reading 25 books in financial education and read them. Find the top 5 books in money management and investing, the top 5 books in starting a business, the top 5 books in scaling a business, the top 5 books in managing a business, and the top 5 books of entrepreneur biographies. And it doesn't matter which ones you pick, find the ones with the highest ratings, the highest reviews, and just read them. This is going to cost you less than $500. But when you do that, you're going to be able to get an MBA level education without paying the price of an MBA. And you're going to look at the world, your money, and the way you use your money completely differently once you finish these books. Now, once you do that, you can decide, what do you want to do? Do you want to go down the entrepreneurial journey, take the risk and do that? Or do you want to do it through your job?
School dropout. I did not get this when I got my PhD. God didn't go. He finally got his PhD. Give him the voice. He finally got it. He's ready now. He got his GED. Give him the voice. God gave me the voice when I was a clown, when I was acting a fool. You got your gift from birth, and the reason why you're struggling is because God gave you something and you're doing the opposite of what he gave you.
I don't think you get the same returns by overwhelmingly working on your weaknesses as you do on tripling down on your strengths. I don't know what else to say. Like, it's so clear to me. I think so much of what I talk about is predicated on not only my successes, but watching my family members, watching that whole ecosystem of startup founders, just watching. I watch a lot. I read a lot of like people's behavior more so than, you know, books or things of that nature. And so, yeah, I mean, I believe that the entrepreneurs that have gone on to quadruple down on their strengths and then hire around their weaknesses have had much better success than the ones that dwell on their shortcomings because somebody they look up to was good at it and said it was important, and they waste their time on something they'll never be. I like micro failure. I hate macro failure. Like, death of your business is bad. But to me, you know what's funny? I'll use a boxing analogy. My favorite boxing, I watch a lot of boxing. I think boxing is a very interesting, and I know, and I'm super into mixed martial arts, but I grew up on boxing, I understand it better. And I like watching it because there's so many things that happen in boxing. First of all, what I love about boxing is there's nowhere to hide. You know, like, it's super interesting, right? There's nowhere to hide. Number two, there's a scenario in boxing that I love the most. There's, for some reason, there's nothing more interesting to me than watching somebody get knocked down in the first round and then go on to win the fight easily. It's an interesting psyche, right? And I like that, and this is what I'm thinking about it, which is like, here's what's bad in boxing and in business. Going into a fight, getting knocked the fuck out in the first round and losing the match, bad. Getting knocked down and then having the adversity to readjust to what you got caught on and navigating it to easily win a fight is remarkable. That's how I think about entrepreneurship. People, the reason so many people struggle with entrepreneurship is you have micro failures almost daily, and they're very in your face. You can't hide. And I like that. I like failure because I think I deserve it. I hate when people don't respect the game. When I fail, it means I f***ed up. And I like that because I think people get audacious. My number one thing that I hate about capitalism is that people use it and they love it and they're big capitalists and they love open market and competition and all that. And then they become 73 and they try to use all their money to protect their money. They're not willing to let a young lion eat them the way they ate somebody else. I hate when they try to manipulate it. That's what I love about sports. What I love about sports is when you're 36 and you were once the best player in the league, but now you're getting a little bit older and your body breaks down, you are forced to retire. The one thing that entrepreneurship and capitalism has to adjust to is once you get old and you're tired and you wanna be on a yacht instead of working your shit, you should lose some money because you're losing.
So identity is you asking the questions until eventually you get to a point that you get to the deeper part of who do you wanna be? What life do you wanna live? And why do you wanna live this life? Why is it important to you? Why is it worth you putting through all these hours? Why would you wanna do that? That transition when you go through it, and then the pressure part when you said, here's who I'm gonna be, where you declare your intentions to the world. This is what I'm gonna be doing. A lot of times we keep things to secret. And so there's a debate. Some say you should never declare your intentions to the world because that pressure could create anxiety. You should never do it. You know, like Babe Ruth pointed a finger and I'm gonna hit a home run. What if you don't hit it? What if you fail? You know, what if you say, Michael Jordan says, the Bulls never winning, losing game 7. You should never say that because it's too much pressure on the players. Or then the other side said, well, you should put the pressure on yourself because your teammates play better because it's not on them, it's on you. And the leader does that. To me, I think declaring intention serves a purpose. I think when you go out there and you say, this is what I'm gonna be doing, this is where I'm gonna be at, you officially have the world holding you accountable. That pressure could be good pressure to put into your life.
Why I like losing. The game told me I lost. Respect to the game. That's why I like playing. I did this when, my friends, I was an entrepreneur when there was no conversation around this. In the 80s and 90s school system and society that I grew up in, I was a failure for making $2,000 a weekend selling baseball cards. Like, I did this when it wasn't cool. I'll do it now while it's cool, and I'll do it again in 15 years when it's not cool again because the economy will collapse and because we don't like to be accountable, we like blaming things, and so we're gonna blame entrepreneurship, not the fact that you weren't self-aware and didn't realize that you weren't a fucking entrepreneur.
Every single day, and I think to myself, I am the most unqualified, like, non-development tech founder in the face of this internet, and yet I'm still going to do it because I don't want to lie at the end of my life and think, I wish I would have tried something. I had no business starting a business, and yet I started one, and I have found ways to create and make and sustain multiple seven-figure revenue streams. And while that may or may not be the case for everybody else, I strongly believe that every single business owner, once armed with what they know how to do, and once armed with the marketing, and once armed with the discipline, and once armed with the consistency, that they too can build a six-figure revenue stream. I believe that with every fiber in my bones. Can you deliver on the promise that you are making? Can you sustain those customer relationships? Because if then, I believe, hands down, you can create a six-figure revenue stream. And in America, if you are creating a six-figure revenue stream, you are in the 1% of the 1%. And I think to myself, as a person who received government-issued food and substances, I went to college on the back of government aid. I was the recipient of people's benevolence and taxpayers' money for me to go back and give back to a community. I think to myself that my business has become a passport for me to move entire legacies, industries, timelines, predisposed ideas of who I should be based on my gender, color of skin, or how I was raised. And I'm like, I became the thing that broke the system and the statistic, but I don't think I'm special. I believe everybody can do this. And so on the days that it becomes very hard, I think to myself, you have the passport. Are you going to keep it for yourself, or are you going to help other people get out too? On the days that are the darkest, I always think to myself, can you help one person get a passport today? And that's the thing that continues to keep me pushing forward. The minute that something was complicated and difficult and impossible, and then decided to go after it, like, I thought it was impossible or difficult to ever position myself as an authority to be a consultant. That was impossible. I thought it was impossible to ever create a course, much less create revenue streams of multiple seven figures in the back of courses. Then I thought it was impossible to create a membership. And then I thought it was impossible to start a tech company. So the earliest part of my career was, I want to become a photographer. And then I want to become a successful photographer. And then all of a sudden, the game got really slow. I could predict my income. I could predict the publicity. I could predict the resources. I could predict the connections. I could predict the publications. And when I predicted it, I loved it and I appreciated it. And then I just didn't want it anymore. And if you don't show up in your business loving what you turn over for your customers or your clients, your business is in decline. And I thought, I must show up 100% for the people who hire me. And if I am not, my time has come. And that's when I started to make shifts in my business. My truth and my experience has been, I have to jump higher. I have to show up earlier. I have to be the first person to turn off the light and the last person to turn off the light. I have to make sure that every number is correct and every T is crossed and every I is dotted. The way that I show up is by being consistent, so consistent that people cannot doubt your capacity to succeed. You have to work harder than the average person. And if you accept those terms, you cannot complain about those terms. I have only known success on the back of consistency. Do I think you could be a success without being consistent? Perhaps, if you have other resources and tools that I was never given. But coming from where I am, my perspective has only been consistency, and the discipline has been everything that I have ever gotten on the back of doing it again and again and again. It is what I teach. It is what I preach. It is what I believe. I'm going to give the advice that I heard my third year of business. I was sitting with a group of other photographers who were farther in their career, and I had always found a way, even though I couldn't afford to get educated specifically in the photography realm because there was like very high ticket experiences, I would find a way to leverage what I thought I was good at in exchange. And so I found a photographer in my area. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I said, hey, would I be able to go to your event and write a few blog posts about your event? And in addition to, if you let me come, could I also write your bio, like for your website? Because I gave like a little preview. I was like, his bio was just like, great photographer, love my camera. And I kind of wrote just like the first paragraph of what could be his bio based on things that I had read about him on the internet. And he was just like, yes. So I got into this room, and what he said, I felt like it just pierced my heart. And this is the thing that I will tell everybody again and again. He said, jump and the net will appear. And it was the first time in my entire life that I had ever heard somebody speak so brazenly about taking a risk. Again, who I am now as a risk taker is so different than who I was when I began. And the way that you strengthen that risk muscle is by taking risks. And when he said that 3 years into it, I realized, okay, now is the time for me to start taking those risks. I wish somebody would have told me that sooner. Let's just be real, right? Like, people hear that jump in the net will appear, jump in, like, the universe has your back, and we love it. We're like high-fiving because we've been on the other side. But like, there have been plenty of times where there was no net and there, like, the universe was just like, I see you, I'm not putting my arms out, because you needed to fall on your face. And like, I've just realized that as many times as I have gotten back up, I was supposed to fall. I was supposed to faceplant. And the less time I spend groveling in the gravel, the faster I find my next success. The biggest difficulty is that people fall and then they stay down. The greatest entrepreneurs are the people who understand that falling is part of the process. So if we just said, I'm going to fall now, and I'm going to fall probably another 175 times before the end of my career, if I look around and say, this is normal and every entrepreneur faces this, then yeah, it sucks. And yeah, I took the jump. And yeah, I didn't end up where I wanted to, but do I have the courage and wherewithal to get up again? And if the answer is yes, you're going to be in business. And the answer is no, you're going to go back to your cubicle and live a very predictable life that is not as fulfilling as you once hoped.
Would time and health bring you more happiness?
As long as I have people around me that I want to be around. I don't like being around people that don't do stuff. I don't like people that talk about doing something and don't. I don't like being around people that can't pay bills and can't throw in and can't contribute, because I know they can. Most of the people watching right now, everything you have budgeted for in your life, you can pay for. It's the things you didn't budget for, the big dream. But everything else, you got covered. Everything people pay attention to. House note, car note, electric bill, water bill, basics. Everything gets covered. What if you just added a whole bunch of other stuff to the list? What if we were all brought up to say, hey, we're going to cover all this stuff? People would be even more productive.
What would you say are the top three ways, the best ways to multiply money then?
Get rid of it. You got to get rid of it. First, you got to make it. I mean, I got to collect it. I got to collect some. Then I got to figure out, okay, this pays for this basic living. Everything above that, don't spend any more money. Like, the rest of it, if this is $4,000 and I make $7,000, the entire $3,000 has got to go into investments.
Every month.
Every single month. At some point, you got to quit being a saver and got to start being an investor. This is what we should have been taught in school, man. This is what we should have been taught as kids. Like, how do I do money? You do it with time. Okay, you don't do it with a job. You're not gonna get $823,000 a year at a job. There's no job that's gonna hire you and pay you $823 without you having to go back to college and spend time and invest money. Just doesn't work like that.
What do you think people in the middle class are doing that they should shift in their mindset in order to start getting out of that?
Well, you don't borrow money to go to college. Why would you trade 5 or 6 or 7 years of the income? Time is money. So I wouldn't go to college. I would never buy a home. I would never put debt on a home. If I bought a home, I wouldn't put debt on it. And these are nevers for me on the come up.
On the come up, yeah.
On the come up.
Once you have the cash.
Once you're wealthy and you want to go buy homes and, you know, buy yachts and stuff, go do whatever you want to do. But on the come up, you would never spend your income. You would never spend primary income on improving the quality of your life. You would only invest. And that's what I'm trying to teach my kids. Like Sabrina's, I let her pay all the bills. I've been doing this since she was probably 6. You pay the bill. We don't give them an allowance. I don't think any kid should be given an allowance.
Interesting. Why not?
If they want money, they become an employee of the company. They work for the company. We give them a series of things to do. We pay them once a year. Okay? We give them a big check at the beginning of the year. That money goes into Cardone Capital.
Wow.
And they live off the distributions.
Come on.
Sometimes they'll get a bonus for doing extra stuff.
But they don't get the money.
They never get the money.
It's invested and they get
that
the
money is invested. They get the distributions. They will create wealth over the next 10 years, but it'll be their own wealth. It's not something I gave them.
Well, if you could only teach your kids 3 lessons about money,
yeah,
what would those lessons be?
people. Number one, meet people. No one's a stranger. The money's a people game. Two, once you get it, don't lose it. And number three, invest in things where you can never lose your capital. Now, the person watching this, she's a waitress and she's got two kids at home. She's like, I'm never gonna make $800. It's because you already gave up on the idea. Like, you never said that's the target. And you keep thinking you gotta wait tables. And you quit already.
How many people are in debt in America?
40% of people that make $1 million a year still are living paycheck to paycheck.
40%?
40%. But that's not because of inflation. That's because they spent money they shouldn't have spent. They thought they were entitled to because they're millionaires.
They live above their means.
They live above their investments, not their means.
How can we shift the relationship to money that we have so we can have a better experience emotionally and spiritually about money?
Anything you're hiding, you're going to have problems with. The secret keeps you sick.
So much of what I've always felt as an entrepreneur was a vulnerability of a school system is not the cliche stuff that you might see in my content, but just by nature, all of us spending the majority of our youth in a system that grades us every 90 days, and we pander to a subjective reality within that, really sets us up to eliminate our creativity and our curiosity, makes us subconsciously conform to the short term, and inherently makes us lack patience. The other thing I'm spending a lot of time on is how much we struggle with our relationship in time and with time. You know, we get sold so many things like life is short, which, you know, I think all of us at this point know, depending on the context that you look at a statement or a situation, it changes the altercation. But so many of the rules in society of when you're supposed to have your life figured out, get married, accomplish, is predicated on a world where people live to 45 years old. It's just the reality of it. So much of what we're affected by is how our grandparents were affected by their parents and grandparents, and those were dying at 40. Of course you should have your life figured out at 30 when you're dead at 47. But we haven't adjusted. You know, 1880 may seem a long time ago, but it's stunningly not. And when life expectancy is in the late 30s and early 40s, and now we're 75, 85, 90, 95, I just think that there's so much confusion in the system. And I just think that we need to have different conversations. Let me give you an example. A different conversation that we need in the business world, that's where I'll keep it, but it's clearly a societal statement, is I'm genuinely struggling why anybody should not be kind. I've watched in the business world for the last 20 years, people justify being cruel to the people that they're a manager of or their admins because they're stressed. I'm sorry, I scolded you. You don't get it. The client had me in a bad day. We have completely accepted bad behavior off of. I'm really passionate about this. If you're a leader by nature, your job is to stop pressure at your level, not deploy more of it underneath you. I think that we need to just do better. And I think that I'm passionate at this point in my life to really start talking about the nuances that are very clear to me, that sustainable things are grounded in very good virtues, and that we have to start recognizing that soft skills will continue to dominate and gain momentum because hard skills are starting to be commoditized. The most insecure place I've ever been in was the fear of confrontation, which blows people's mind because on stage and public persona, it's candor is my strength. But in real life, I hated candor because my father was very aggressive with candor, but very negative. And I wasn't able to separate the vehicle he was deploying the candor in from the value of candor. So for 25 years of my career, I was anxious every time I decided somebody had to get fired. It completely put me into spirals. I would avoid it. It was always sloppy. To a T, every person that's ever been close to me in business that works for me or worked for me that doesn't love me is based on one thing, my inability to be candorous. And it's been a very big shift for me in the last 3-4 years. The new book is called 12 and a half. It's about 13 attributes, but I call it 12 and a half because I'm only halfway through my journey on kind candor. And I needed to create the word kind in front of candor to even begin to deploy candor. And it has led to an incredible amount of unhappiness in my life and career was my inability to be candorous, which is wild because my content is incredibly candorous because I'm not talking to anybody. I'm talking to everybody. But when it's Steve or Sally or Johnny or Nicole or Karen, it was very hard for me. And so now I do it.
The hustler does not waste time. Somebody with talent, somebody with connections, somebody with some education and some experience, oftentimes they waste time. They feel like they can afford to. They feel like they have permission to, right? They feel like they've got it figured out. The hustler says, I don't have a second to waste. And so while you're sleeping, while you're being entertained, I'm beating on my craft. The hustler says, I'm beating on my craft. The hustler says, I'm going after it. The hustler says, I can't afford to miss this moment. I can't afford to overlook this critical time, this crucial opportunity. I'm going to give it everything I have, period. When you've got this hustler's mentality, you're not looking for a handout. You just know you have to outwork everybody in the room. You got to put the work in after hours. You're not wasting your time being entertained. You're not wasting your time watching TV all day. You're not wasting your time complaining about what you don't have. The hustler has already come to the conclusion that if they don't have something, they have to become. It's not connections that wins. It's not even education that wins. I can be inundated with information. I can be educated, but with no application. The hustler moves in a different realm of wisdom, a different realm of application. They're going after it. Everything that they have is on the table. The hustler is going to outwork everybody in the room. The hustler says, if me and you are on the treadmill, two things are gonna happen. Either you're going to get off first, or I'm gonna die trying to beat you, right? Because I'm completely sold out to the dream, the vision that I'm carrying. The hustler's mentality within the context of entrepreneurship is, I am totally committed to this. I am totally committed to this. The difference between game changers and city shakers and influencers and disruptors and the people that just talk about it, people that just dream about it, have visions about it, fill notebooks about it. The difference between the two, number one, is that they are absolutely clear on what it is that they've been called to do and what it is they've been called to build and who it is they've been called to become. In order to really lock in the hustler's mentality, you must understand the distinctives that really make a hustler a hustler. Number two, a hustler is committed and consistent. So this is not a Monday through Friday thing, it's a Monday through Monday thing. Every single day, I'm beating on my craft. Every single day, I'm looking to become more than I was yesterday. I am not in competition with anybody. The hustler says the only person I am competing with is who I used to be yesterday. You may not have been born with natural talent, but you can put work in and build a skill set. You can be on your craft every single day. Put the hours in. No days off mentality. As long as you're building, I'm gonna put the hours in, I'm gonna put the time in. There are life-changing opportunities that are going to arise in your life. Critical moments, crucial times that are gonna arise. And the first thing on a hustler's radar is not the opportunity, it's the mindset. Because if I get the opportunity with the wrong mindset, I won't maintain the opportunity. I'll lose it. And the hustler understands the power of retention, okay? So the hustler eliminates distractions. Your talent, your good looks, your connections, your education, your experience is just not going to get you. The hustler is just programmed to get things other people can't have. Every single day somebody's doing something you're not willing to do to secure the future.
And so when you go into the day with that mindset, that list will shrink. The list of people that are outworking you, it'll shrink. So you got to dedicate to creative time. You need an army to fulfill destiny. So you got to be connected. You got to grow your network. And all that you do, and your failures and your successes, learn from them. Note takers are the money makers. Hustlers take notes. It's difficult to manifest what is not written down. Put me in a room with 100 people. I'm going to take more notes than them. I'm going to listen better. I'm going to have more fun. I'm going to learn more. I'm going to talk less. And so the movement that we see across the earth from the high achievers, the successful entrepreneurs, those who are launching businesses and organizations, it all starts with their mindset, their mentality. There's a difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. The psychology of a champion is just different. Hustlers are just wired differently. And that's the difference between really a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. The hustler's mentality is, how can this challenge be my opportunity? And what can I learn?